Hey guys, it's The Last Set presenting the MMA Hour with Jack and Joe. Before we get into everything, we just want to send our condolences to the Nurmagomedov family. Recently, Khabib had lost his father due to complications with coronavirus. He recently died in hospital in Moscow. It was really sad because he was a big proponent in MMA, and it's really sad to see, especially because Khabib and his dad were so close. So we just send our condolences to his family. All right, it's time to get into the podcast. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How you been?
Not too bad. Yeah. Let's get into UFC 251. Big shock. We had Gilbert Burns. He tested positive for coronavirus, and now he's out of UFC 251.
It's a bit of a shock really for us all, but one thing that was a little bit more shocking was the fact that who's now replacing Gilbert Burns is no one other than the baddest motherfucker himself and our own street Jesus, Jorge Masvidal. And it's a big fight, man, but I was not expecting him to take the fight literally on 1 week notice.
No, I didn't expect that at all, especially since he was, you know, he was having issues with the UFC over just having a full camp for a UFC fight. And now he's taking on 1 week notice. It sounds like this was the leverage that his team needed to put his case to the UFC that he's worth the money that he was asking.
Mm-hmm. So those of you don't know, but Jorge Masvidal has basically been in a dispute with the UFC lately over pay. It's probably one of the biggest things that's going on right now in a time like this in the UFC, where a lot of fighters, I believe, they've been underpaid. Now, one of the reasons why is when fighters sign a contract with the UFC, what they offer them is they offer them a six-fight plan, and they get a certain amount of money each fight, regardless of who the fighter is.
Yep.
Now, obviously, a guy like Masvidal, he's now been in the UFC for quite some time. He's risen to star power after a total of, you know, after 33 wins and 13 losses, then he finally got the break that he was looking for. He's now considered one of the most famous fighters in the UFC.
Well, he's on a three fight win streak after Darren Till, Nate Diaz, and Ben Askren.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the reason what's going on right now in the UFC. He's just been in a dispute for more money. And so obviously I wasn't expecting him to take the fight on this such short notice. And I'm guessing the pay must have been pretty big for him.
It sounds like Dana gave him the money that he was really asking for. It sounds like it. I think it sounded like exactly what he needed to put his point across and get that bread. I'm so happy that somebody came in. Because when Gilbert Burns tested positive for coronavirus, everyone was like, oh no, because this was UFC Fight Island. This was UFC 251. It was going to be this massive fight. Kamaru Usman versus the biggest prospect who we were kind of betting on beating Usman. Let's be real. Because he's quite a dangerous character. And then he tests positive. We're sitting there going, like, holy shit, what's going on? What's going to happen to the UFC fight?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing we were really expecting is we weren't actually expect. So one thing we weren't expecting was Jorge Masvidal to actually be the one to replace Gilbert Burns. We were kind of hoping it was going to be Colby Covington, because his last fight was a loss to Kamaru Usman, which was for the interim world. Was it for the
world title? No, it was for the world title.
For the world title. Now the world division is already a stacked division. We've got some big names in there, but so clearly it wouldn't have been hard to find a replacement who was at the same caliber, same star power or mm-hmm. popularity. Mm-hmm. But for it to be Jorge Masvidal, considering that he's already probably one of the biggest names in UFC right now,
yeah,
and we were hoping it would be Colby Covington because of the fact that he just loves to stir shit up and he loves to get into Kamaru Usman's head. So that's why, and not even that, but when Gilbert Burns was, when they released the statement that Gilbert Burns had tested positive for COVID-19, basically Colby Covington jumped straight onto Twitter and said, you know who to call, Marty, and it ain't Ghostbusters.
In classic Colby style. Well, Colby, he did really well against Kamaru last time. I would argue, and I think you might argue as well, going into round five, you know, one of the fighters won two rounds, the other fighter won the other two rounds. Mm-hmm. It was going 2-2 into round five. It just showed that Kamaru's still got that power into the later rounds, and he did so well. He did really, really well. Is there any other fights other than the Kamaru fight that really interest you at this point?
Oh, well, obviously we got the Alexander Volkanovski versus Max Holloway, which we've talked about in our first mm-hmm. podcast, mm-hmm. which you should go check out, by the way. The Petr Yang versus Jose Aldo. The return of Rose Namajunas versus Jessica Andrea. And, of course, Amanda Ribas versus Paige VanZant, who basically, if you don't really follow Paige VanZant on Instagram, you should.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, she's got a lot of fans online, doesn't she? That's why she probably gets paid as much as she does, just because a lot of fans tune in. I never really got that bit of like being into UFC female fighters, but certainly it brings a lot of revenue to the UFC, so they definitely push that quite a bit. Although Paige is very, like, she seems to have a lot of injuries, though. She's always on a card, and then she gets pulled out because of, you know, she gets a lot of injuries and things like that.
Mm.
Yeah. Moving forward from that, have you seen UFC Fight Island? Have you seen the promo for it?
Oh, dude.
It's insane, isn't it?
The amount of money that must have gone into that, and the amount of effort that went into that. Like, the one thing I respect the most about Dana was that when the whole coronavirus thing happened, he refused to fire any staff. He refused to let any staff go. He made sure that everyone had work and he kept them paid.
Mm.
Like, we got to give him some credit for that. And even though the fighters may be claiming they're underpaid, but yeah, man, you got to give the credit to all the people who are building the arena for you to fight on. The people who probably have to go away from their families just to build that arena in a foreign country. You know, there's just this so much effort that goes on behind the scenes that's just going towards this fight island. And I'm excited with fighting on a beach.
Oh, no, they're not. They've built a dome. They've built a dome around it. Yeah, yeah. But when I watched the promo, I was amazed. And Dana posted the promo for Masvidal versus Usman as well, which I'm going to take as a confirmation that it's been confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
It looked incredible. It looked so amazing. How much money has the UFC pumped into this fight? Because it sounds like if they go into this kind of length, we're not just going to get just like a month of fights, mm-hmm. right? I feel like Fight Island is going to stay for a good while.
Well, one thing the coronavirus did was it exposed the weaknesses in all the business. You know what I mean? Exposed mm-hmm. the weak points, like what happens if a worldwide pandemic comes down and you can't have people in your stadium? What do you do? So I think what they've learned from this is now they've got a backup in case that something like this ever happens again. But not only that, but they've got something for the future. You know what I mean? If they have a car that doesn't sell enough tickets, send them to Fight Island.
It seems like they have a close relationship with Abu Dhabi anyway. Yas Island looked incredible. And I think it would be such a good experience for people. Let's say we get through coronavirus. There's no issues with pandemics anymore. I was thinking, what better than either getting tickets for Las Vegas or tickets to be flown privately to Fight Island to watch? And that, 'cause that's like Enter the Dragon style. That's incredible. That's like what you're sitting there with the elite, which would probably be all the Abu Dhabi like princes and all things like that. And they would be watching these guys fight on an island. Mm-hmm. You get flown in a private jet or private plane. You sit down. When we looked at the promo, there's all kinds of areas. There's testing areas, but then there's areas like to train. There's areas to eat. It's insane. And the amount of staff they have there I don't know where this money is coming from. I don't know where this money is coming from.
Well, I believe that maybe because everyone was literally just stuck at home. Let's think about it. The last few fight cards that we've had have been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson fight card.
Very big fight.
And then we had a lot of star power on that. We watched the Dan Hooker versus Dustin Poirier one just recently.
Arguably another really amazing. These lightweight fights have been so good.
Yep.
So good.
Not even that, but we also had the Curtis Blaydes versus Alexander Volkanovski. The what's his name? The one who just showed last week.
Alexander Volkov.
Yeah, that's it. Sorry, I was going to say Volkanovski for a second. Volkov.
That's a very tall. That's like those Volkanovski had one of those Mario mushrooms.
So basically, the fight cards recently have been so good. I mean, they've had a tremendous amount of fighters on the cards. So I'm guessing they must have got a lot of money off the pay per view. I'm guessing because everyone was stuck, you know, too busy stuck at home. So everyone was probably just watching all the fights, and that's where they must have just saved up or generated that revenue from all the pay per views and devoted it towards the Fire Island.
I don't know if they've used loans or they've used you know, the investors that are in the company, and they've just pumped it into the UFC.
Mm-hmm. That's why I thought maybe they had some investors, because if you think about it, a lot of sports were shut down. Now they're all slowly coming back, especially here in WA. But a lot of sports shut down. Everyone was losing money. But the thing is, the UFC fighters were still getting paid, and they were still, because they were still keeping them going. So that's why. Because I feel like a lot of people who weren't really fight fans before COVID, then COVID happened and they were looking for something to watch, probably turned on the UFC.
It was the perfect... Well, the thing is, Dana knew what he was doing. He knew that when no sports were going on, they would tune into ESPN, and what would be going on there? The UFC. They brought a lot of more casual fans to the sport, and the UFC is very good at bringing casual fans to the sport. I don't see an issue with how they've played this. You know, they've shown that they can do it safely. If they do test positive, they're off the card. If they test positive afterwards, then they have to be quarantined. They haven't had any issues with deaths or fatalities or anything like that. And Dana knew what he was doing from the start, and he literally said from the start he did not care. I'm really glad that a lot of sports are coming back to the TV and to the mainstream media, because, you know, for a long time while during coronavirus, where a lot of people were cooped up, there were no sports going on other than the UFC. You know?
Oh man, I mean, speaking of coronavirus, like, we've got every day here in Australia, all the states are getting better. All the states are unloading, except for one. You know? Victoria, New South Wales, man, what are you doing?
They bumped up by about 100 cases or so.
They recorded 182 new coronavirus cases over the weekend. Not even that. This is just recently, like, all the hard work of Victoria and what happened in New South Wales has now completely been undone. But here's the other, like, sort of trending news that's going around for coronavirus. And that is that there's apparently a new strain of coronavirus that is four times more mutated. It's four times more deadly than this previous coronavirus. Yeah, that's the one.
It's more infectious, but it doesn't make people sicker. That's what it is. It's 3 to 9 times faster at spreading, but it doesn't make people sicker. However, that was the whole issue with coronavirus, that it spread so quickly. That was the issue, mm-hmm. right? It spread so fast. It doesn't have more, like, tougher symptoms. However, is far more infectious than the previous strain of coronavirus. And that's scary, man. That's
really scary. The goal of a virus isn't really for it to kill its victims. It's literally to survive and spread.
Yeah, so it can infect as many hosts as possible.
I mean, really, in terms of infecting many cases possible, right? Brazil right now has got over 1 million confirmed cases. So 1.6 million confirmed cases, 64,000 deaths. And right now in the United States, where it's still really prevalent, over 132,000 cases. And not even that, but some countries that closed their borders at the start and let people out, such as India and Russia, they're still climbing in terms of cases, man.
Well, we know in here in Western Australia, we're doing really, really well. We're definitely, like, one of the model states for Australia. We're doing so well in terms of our cases. No real... There's hardly any new case. Maybe what, one? One over the last...
I think we had a few.
We did?
Yeah. I believe we had a few. It was because it was just people returning from overseas. And that's majority. That's true. That was the majority of the cases that happened here in Western Australia.
Yeah.
So really, that's just... what's going on. But what does this mean for travel? When's travel going to open up? I think it's going to be a while before we even allow.
I see it happening in 2021. Mm-hmm. I don't see it happening in 2020. I don't see festivals happening in 2020. And it would have to be early 2021, but we would see them again.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Did you have the numbers for Western Australia?
Okay, so numbers for Western Australia. Recently, we've had a couple of confirmed cases over the weekend, and then...
A handful of cases, right?
Yeah, basically handful. A handful of cases. So
compared to what was it? What did you say before? 182?
Yeah.
For Victoria?
Hell yeah.
Did you know why Victoria had so many cases compared to the other larger states?
I do not know why.
Is it due to maybe that they have a lot higher density?
Could be. But if you think about it, WA, a majority of our population probably exists, like I said, somewhere between the points of Bunbury and Yanchep.
Yeah.
I would say that's a majority of our population because we're so closely packed together.
That's why I was going to say density, because around Perth, it's probably what... You know, there's not that many people in Western Australia. And in Perth, that's where the majority of people are.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, coronavirus is pretty much... It was an intense time for everyone. It still is for a lot of people. But for us, pretty much, we just played Call of Duty through the whole thing like it was nothing.
We... Yeah, I would just text you like, you want to play COD? And you're like, yeah, man. What else am I doing, dude? I'm at home. I can't see anyone. I'm tired. I just want to play COD with the boys again. So that's what we did.
Yeah, could have been a better time. I reckon all those like things like Netflix, things like games, consoles, and games. They just literally just they stopped. Just
went, well, we played a lot of Warzone and multiplayer. We played what did we play especially? It was the Spec Ops, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What did we get to? We got to like wave. So wave
40 something.
40? Or, no, it was like wave 50. It was like wave 50. No, it went 49. I clocked over to 50. And as soon as it hit 50, wave 50, it just went.
Just lost connection to the host. Well, speaking of video games right now, I mean, one of the biggest video games out there is The Last of Us Part 2,
mm-hmm.
which is huge. Now, those of you who played The Last of Us Part 1, it was probably one of the last games to ever come out on the PS3. So they literally did the same thing and made The Last of Us Part 2 as one of the last games to come out on the PS4 before the PS5 drops.
Well, The Last of Us 1 came out in 2013, and now we've got The Last of Us Part 2. And that's to do with... it's like a zombie kind of apocalypse kind of...
Yeah. It's like that, basically, but it's more like a instead of like your typical flesh-eating zombies and the rotting corpses, they're more like fungi-type zombies, yeah.
See, I've never really been into the whole zombie ones unless we played Black Ops or something like Black Ops Zombies.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. I remember those days. Hopefully the new Call of Duty includes that, because new Call of Duty is apparently going to be Cold War.
Oh, yeah, you were saying, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's going to be out on the new Xbox, and it's going to be out on the PlayStation 5.
Yeah. So people basically are just waiting for the new trailer to drop. If it's going to probably... The trailer will probably drop at some point in the next month or so,
mm-hmm.
because normally with Call of Duty, a new one gets released about every November.
Yeah.
And the reason why they're sort of waiting to drop the new trailer is because when the PS5 comes out, they'll probably want to make it a PS5 exclusive game.
Oh, that's a good point, yes.
And then that way, you know, people will probably be selling it only with the PS5. I don't know, maybe that's what I'm hearing, but, you know, don't quote me on that one.
I'm really excited to see the PS5.
Yeah, I mean, it looks great. I think it's going to be obviously a step up. I'm looking forward to buying it, but, you know, obviously when the thing comes out, I'm just waiting to hear the reviews.
It's going to be around like 700 Australian.
Yeah.
So that it's quite a bit.
That's
it's
quite a bit. We could do a lot of things with that $700. I mean, we could.
Yeah, we could upgrade the studio and things like that.
Yeah.
Segueing back to the UFC, Calvin Kattar versus Dan Ige is the following fight after UFC fight. And I know we're talking about it a little bit too early, but we can talk about it in later podcasts as well. Calvin Kattar versus Dan Ige, what were you thinking?
It's a bit of a hard one. I mean, I do like Calvin Kattar. he fought really well in his last fight against Jeremy Stephens.
Yeah.
So Danny Gay is a fighter who's
21-4.
He's got a good streak. So
he's definitely a good prospect as well.
Yeah. It's too early for me to say, but I want to go with Calvin Kattar.
I would also go with Calvin Kattar, although Danny Gay, he's definitely got a solid ground game that he likes to employ in his fights. I do believe that Danny Gay fought not that long ago, fairly recently. So he beat Barboza in the 17th of May. So about, coming up to 2 months ago? Mm-hmm. Coming up to 2 months ago.
Not even that, but Edson Barboza is a very, very high-level striker.
Well, he moved down to featherweight.
Wow.
He looked impressive as well. He looked really good. He looked really, really good at featherweight. Because he was often at lightweight. He's a supreme kicker. Mm-hmm. Excellent leg kicker. I think a lot of UFC fighters probably have PTSD from his leg kicks.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And looking at his spinning back kick, cool. His spinning hook kick.
You know, oh, yeah. We've all seen the video of that one a couple of times. The poor sword hit the floor. His hands were still up.
Oh, yeah. He's just out cold.
It was probably considered one of the greatest knockouts ever.
It's definitely up for debate for sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's definitely maybe top 10. Top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, not that Danny Gay is not a really good fighter. I think he's 14-2. So he's 14-2. He's done really well. I think he's definitely won his... I don't know about prior to this, but he's won his last two fights. He's been fighting pretty regularly. So that's 2 months ago he fought, and then I think it was about 3 months before that he fought before then as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's definitely a regular fighter. I can't remember what... Calvin Kattar's fight was... That was against Jeremy Stephens, which was a good bit of time ago. I think Calvin Kattar is a really impressive striker. I'd love to see him in the cage really soon. And I think I just wanted to talk about another fight that was really interesting, and that was Pedro Munhoz versus Frankie Edgar. Now, Frankie Edgar, I believe he was the very first lightweight champion? Was he the very first? In the UFC, I'd have to check that. Don't quote me on that. But Frankie Edgar, very impressive MMA fighter. He's definitely a vet in his own right. He was meant to fight Corey Sandhagen. We know what happened to Corey, but that bout got cancelled. I'm looking forward to this. Frankie Edgar has been fighting for a really long time. This might be one of his, you know, his last couple of fights. And he's fighting Pedro Munhoz, who is no slouch at all. Mm-hmm. So I believe this is going to be Frankie's, this is going to be his bantamweight debut.
Yeah. So out of his last six fights, he's lost three of them.
Uh-huh.
Including losses to Kang Chan Sung Jong, Max Holloway.
Yeah.
He beat Cub Swanson, though, and he lost to Brian Ortega. So he's also someone who fluctuates throughout the divisions as well.
It sounds like it. Bring us back to his record, because I believe he beat Yair Rodriguez, who is no slouch himself, very good striker himself. But he did lose to Brian Ortega. He lost to Max Holloway, and he lost to the Korean Zombie. So there are some big names out there. So he can still hang with the big names. However, I do question his return back to his debut to bantamweight division.
Yeah, it's just the problem is right now he's 38.
So he's out of his prime. He's reaching the end of his fighting career, and he's fighting Pedro Munhoz, who we know he knocked out Cody Garbrandt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's not really fighting some tomato can or some potato that they're just throwing his way. He's definitely asking for one of the best. Actually, I wanted to talk to you another bit of UFC fight news. So we know that the previous week we were watching the Hooker fight, which we talked about on our previous podcast. Go check it out. And Hooker lost, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
He lost in his fight.
Which was a fucking tremendous fight, by the way.
Amazing fight. Now, afterwards, he went and told sources, I think the day after, he said, give me either Tony... He asked for someone else. He asked for Tony. Who else is another prospect in the lightweight division? I know he asked for Tony the first time, and he just came off a pretty harsh loss, going through an absolute war. And he asked for Tony Ferguson, of all people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Of all people.
Well, what I got to say is straight off the bat that, you know, with the UFC, we don't always really remember the champions. We always remember them, but we always remember the most exciting fighters. And Dan Hooker just claimed that he is probably one of the most exciting fighters to watch. You know, and there's another thing that you sent me last week. And that is the curse of the Irish dragon, Paul Felder.
Exactly.
Did you want to tell the fans a little bit about that?
Well, I'll bring it up right now. But Paul Felder, he also said that he previously fought against Dan Hooker. Controversially, Dan Hooker won. I felt Paul Felder won. Paul Felder is also in the lightweight division. Very good striker himself. Really good chin. He's nicknamed the Irish Dragon. Paul Felder recently retired after the Dan Hooker fight, but he actually said online, "Hey, I'm welcome to fight either Dustin Poirier or Dan Hooker. I'm so keen for that." So I'd love to see them run it back. That would be a really good fight to see back, because we know that was another lightweight war. So what Joe was referring to was that, I think it was for the last four fights of the Irish Dragon, whoever wins against the Irish Dragon goes on to lose their next fight.
And that's happened to the last four athletes.
Last four. I'll just bring it up right now.
Yeah, so just looking at the lightweight division, it's probably one of the most stacked divisions. And so at the top we have Justin Gaethje, then it's Dustin Poirier, then it's Tony Ferguson, who's dropped to third, then fourth is Conor McGregor, then fifth is Dan Hooker. So sixth is Charles Oliveira, and seven is Paul Felder. And then further down the rankings, we also got Kevin Lee, Ala Quinta, Donald Cowboy and Cerrone, and Gregor Gillespie. Now, all these guys are super exciting fighters. That's what makes them it such a stacked division. But you know what I think would be a really, really good fight if we do Dan Hooker versus Conor McGregor.
I have one better for you. Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier 2.
Ooh,
I would love to see that fight. That would
be good.
I would love to see that fight. Because the thing is, back in the featherweight division, Dustin Poirier fought Conor McGregor. This was his last fight in the featherweight division, because he did lose against Conor McGregor in the first round. Conor said he would make it easy. He did make it easy. He beat Poirier very, very fast, very quickly, very significantly. And then afterwards, Dustin Poirier moved up to lightweight division, and he has been on an absolute tear. Now, he went to interim lightweight champion, fought Khabib, sadly lost, I think it was in round four, by either rear neck choke or neck crank. I'm unsure if it was underneath the chin. But he's done so well. And everyone says that Dustin Poirier, he had an absolute evolution when he came from featherweight to lightweight division. He looks so impressive. He has one of the highest accuracies for striking. I think it was almost 80% striking accuracy in his last fight, and that went over five rounds against Dan Hooker, who is an excellent striker himself out of City Kickboxing. He's so impressive. I would love to see them run it back, because a lot of people say that, you know, Dustin Poirier could have been weakened by the weight cut, because it was quite a harsh cut for him to come down to 145. I would love to see that fight again, because I did a little bit of research, and it turns out that a lot of Dustin Poirier's team actually said was that in his camps when he was in featherweight, what he would do is he was doing mainly cardio. He was doing a lot just to take the weight off. It wasn't training to get better.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't training for a specific opponent. It wasn't training to be the best Dustin Poirier that they could make. It was simply to lose the weight and for him just to fight his heart out. And it just did not work against Conor McGregor, who is obviously the superior striker in that division. I would love to see that fight again. What do you think?
Oh, I think that'd be great. I mean, Dustin Poirier is a different animal right now than the way he used to be. So I would definitely, you know, Conor McGregor, he hasn't fought in the lightweight division for a long, long time.
No, he hasn't. That would be a brilliant fight to go back, because we know that Dustin Poirier, he went in It would be Khabib's last fight, right? Khabib's last fight was against Dustin Poirier.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Poirier, he went and did four rounds with him. I believe the same as Conor. Because mm-hmm. Conor also got choked out in the fourth round, I believe. Mm-hmm. Either Poirier was in the third or the fourth round. I can't perfectly remember. But he did get submitted. They both went around the same time with each other. They've both fought each other before. I think Dustin Poirier is ranked number 3 in the... Go down. He is ranked number 2. Mm-hmm. So he's ranked number 2. Dustin Poirier versus Tony would be a really good fight as well. Obviously, Gaethje is going against Khabib, which is an excellent fight to make. I would like to see Conor against Dustin Poirier or Tony Ferguson. I feel like there's not a whole lot of stuff he can do at welterweight, unless it's a Masvidal fight. I would love to see Conor McGregor fight Dustin Poirier. I would be so stoked to watch that fight. I would be so hyped for that.
Mm-hmm. And again, always going to be a stacked division. And not even that, but a lot of divisions these days are too. Another, we were just talking about the welterweight fight. That's another great, great division. I mean, right at the top, Gilbert Burns, still number 1. Number 2, Colby Covington. 3, Jorge Masvidal. 4, Leon Edwards. He's considered the dark horse of the division.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to give him credit. And we've got Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, Damian Maia, Michael Chaser, Rafael Dos Anjos. This is a former champion. You know, then, of course, Nate Diaz himself. And still climbing, trying to climb up the ranks himself is Anthony Pettis.
Mm.
Let's just talk about Anthony Pettis for a while. He's probably one of the most derailed, like most remembered derailed hype trains in all of the UFC. I mean, I remember for a moment, there was a point in time when the UFC like hyped up Anthony Pettis so much. He was sort of like the poster boy for the UFC. He was one of the first ever UFC fighters to be on the Wheaties box.
Anthony Pettis was on the Wheaties box.
On the Wheaties box.
No way.
Yeah. You know, there was a point in time when he was a massive champion. And then I believe he lost his title to Rafael Dos Anjos.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
He fought again. Anthony Pettis fought Tony Ferguson, which we were watching live in the pub. And that was a really good fight.
Oh, that was good. That's
a really good fight.
I reckon that could have gone the distance if it wasn't for Anthony Pettis. He didn't break his hand in the fight.
Break his hand.
I mean, because we had a little bit of a discussion about who we thought actually was winning at the time.
I've watched it a couple times. I still... You know, you could go either way, right? Because yeah. I do understand where you're coming from. I still think Pettis was winning. Because he dropped Ferguson quite a few times. Ferguson was recovering. He was doing his little roly-poly
thing. Yeah, he does those little roly-poly things.
He's like gone for a little barrel roll. But Pettis was winning. He was winning. I believe so anyway. I would have loved to seen that go to the full extent of the fight. Actually, I want to ask you, what is Anthony Pettis' next fight, actually? Because he went up to welterweight. He wasn't seeing much success there. I think he just had a really tough time at lightweight cutting, and he just said it was so difficult for him to lose the weight again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was still a great fight, but not even that. That was a great day because if those of you remember the Anthony Pettis versus Tony Ferguson fight, that was on the day of the Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Conor McGregor fight card. Now, we all know how that went. Now, remember on the day we watched it, there was a brawl on TV both there and also outside. In the pub.
it was a few, I believe, either Russian or they were
Khabib supporters, basically.
They were Khabib supporters. I believe they were Muslim.
Yeah.
And
they rocked up to an Irish pub.
They rocked up to an Irish pub, which we were eating.
We were having a nice full Irish breakfast.
It was a good fry up.
It was a good fry up.
It was two of them, wasn't it? It was like two or three against one big Irish bodybuilder, and he was going, "Oh, come on then, come fight us, then."
Yeah, a few drinks got thrown in the pub as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It was chaos.
So straight after Khabib submitted Conor, we stood up on the couch and looked through this tiny little window outside, and then there's the Irish bodybuilder going, "Oh, come on then, come fight us.
And then there was that, and then who can forget what happened on the day, straight after the fight, when Khabib jumped the cage And then he jumped onto Dylan Danis. Speaking of Dylan Danis, we haven't heard much from him lately.
You do. You just tune it out. He just does a lot of memes.
He hasn't fought in a long time.
Well, he fights for Bellator.
Yeah, he fights for
Bellator.
For Bellator.
I don't know about when Bellator is going to start doing fights. I don't know about when ONE Championship is going to start doing fights again.
Yeah. Well, one thing I remember was when Hermosa Judo finally retired. Basically, he just sent out a tweet saying no one cares.
Yeah. Well. Speaking of Henry Cejudo, he has actually been having some beef with... sounds like we're just talking about Instagram beef again. But he was having a bit of beef with Ryan Garcia. He wants to fight... He really wants to box Ryan Garcia. I don't blame him because he needs that... He wants that money. He'll take his first girlfriend out on a date. Take his first girlfriend out on a date with that money. Come on, dude. You can't...
I don't know. It's just such a weird fight because... Ryan Garcia is just a boxer, and for Henry Cejudo to step in the ring with him and fight a boxer in just a boxing match, I kind of see Ryan Garcia winning. I think Ryan Garcia at the moment is undefeated.
He is undefeated. He's got very fast hands.
He's got quite a few first round knockouts. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard. I have to go with Ryan Garcia if the chance ever came that Henry Cejudo would meet him in the boxing ring. But if it was the other way around, Henry Cejudo would absolutely tear him apart.
I don't think it would last a one round.
Yeah.
I don't think it would... I don't know. It depends how fast Ryan Garcia can run.
Yeah, but the thing is, Henry Cejudo has been trained by the man himself, Mike Tyson. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of videos out there on YouTube of Mike Tyson training Henry Cejudo, and it looks good, man. He's boxing.
Well, he was trying to show him how to use the peekaboo style.
Mm.
Yeah, that Mike Tyson kind of coined and made quite famous. It's one of those fights. It's just like McGregor's kind of started it off, and now a lot of them are trying it. We've seen YouTubers fighting. Now we're seeing a couple more UFC fighters calling out boxing fighters and vice versa. It's weird to see. I'm one of those people as well. Like it's a weird matchup. I'd still be one of the people tuning in. I would still tune in and watch that fight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, controversial.
Well, also,
I think Cejudo would give Garcia problems.
Oh, for sure. But really, it all started with the Conor McGregor versus Mayweather fight, and then that was the first time ever an MMA fighter had ever transitioned to boxing,
mm-hmm.
and everyone's sort of just trying to travel with it. Because a lot of the things that have happened in the UFC, a lot of champions really started with Conor McGregor. Like, for example, the double champ. He was the first double champ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once one of the fighters becomes a champion, it's their goal to become a double champ.
Yeah.
So, like we had, you know, John Jones is a light heavyweight and a heavyweight champion. Daniel Cormier was a light heavyweight and heavyweight champion before Jones came back.
Sorry, what did you say? John Jones was a...
It wasn't a two-time. Sorry, Daniel Cormier was the light heavyweight champion.
John Jones was a two-time UFC champion, but he wasn't a two-belt UFC champion.
And then, of course, we have Amanda Nunes, who's both the women's bantamweight champion and the women's featherweight champion. Uh-huh. Which, by the way, you know, here's my take on Amanda Nunes. I think it's time, maybe in the future, she should retire. I think she's coming close.
Don't say that, dude.
The reason why I'm saying that is because she's just cleared out the division. Her last fight, poor girl. I wanted that fight to end.
Battered.
She was getting absolutely battered. And she's just on a massive fight winning streak. There's just no one who, off the top of my head, who could be a potentially better fighter.
I don't want her to retire because she's so good.
Yeah.
I would like to see a potential fight with Weili Zhang or Valentina Shevchenko.
Yeah. Well, she's fought Valentina Shevchenko and beat her.
She has.
And it was a bit controversial.
Valentina did not like that.
Yeah. But Weili Zhang
would be a huge fight as well.
Mm. What's the difference between strawweight and bent and featherweight then? How much is the drop? It's got to be a bit of a drop. Because Naomi, she has to go down from flyweight to strawweight.
Well, the difference is that Shang and Shevchenko could have a potential fight because mm-hmm. they're so much closer. There's it goes flyweight and then there's strawweight that they can both fight.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would say the person that wins that fights Amanda Nunes. Mm. That would be impressive. Because Amanda Nunes has bantamweight and she has featherweight. We know Valentina has flyweight. And we know Zhang has strawweight. There's quite a big difference for Zhang and Amanda Nunes. I feel like Zhang is very big for her weight class, though. She's an absolute horse. She's very built. She's very built.
She's very, very well-rounded as well.
She is very well-rounded. I feel like she has to cut quite a bit for her division, I feel like.
Understood, yeah, definitely. I mean,
the reason why I say that I think she cuts a bit is I don't think it would be that hard for her to fight Amanda Nunes at bantamweight.
Yeah,
I don't see it being that hard.
It's just an exciting time for female fighters. Female fighters are really, really starting to build right now over the past couple of years.
Yeah, definitely.
Like Weili Zhang, Valentina Shevchenko, Amanda Nunes, and of course there's other some stars out there like Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Rose Namajunas, and then we've got some other potential upcoming fighters, and then we've got, you know, names that are becoming household, some household names. We got Michelle Waterson, you know, Paige VanZant. It's good to see the women's division slow getting a lot more built. You know, yeah. And I want to see where it goes, and it's an exciting time.
Well, you had the Ronda era when she kind of brought it to the UFC. You had, she had a big rivalry with Misha Tate. It's really weird to see how it's transferred. There was Holly Holmes as well. The three big names were kind of Ronda Rousey, Misha Tate, Holly Holm, and that was the main big money stars. And now we've transitioned where the UFC has done quite a good job at really pushing their female fighters. You know, they have a huge amount of female fighters that the majority of fans do know. It's great to see that the female division has grown to this, where a lot of their fights, they're on the co-main or they're on the main event. You know, it's really good to see. Really, really good to see. That Rose Namajunas fight against Jessica Andrade at UFC 251, we're very hyped for, aren't we, Joe?
Yeah, it's going to be a really, really good fight because Rose Namajunas, you know, she lost her last fight to Andrea, basically from getting slammed, and it was probably one of the nastiest knockouts I've ever seen, especially for... in the way that it happened when she landed on her neck.
Well, Rose is a very scary knockout, but Rose was winning up to that point. She just got caught out of it. I think what it was Jessica Andrade was going for a takedown. I believe Rose was going, if I can remember, because it was quite a while ago since Rose's fought. I think Rose went for a Kimura or something. And then when Andrade picked her up, because she was stuck in that submission attempt, she couldn't rotate away and break fall. She hit her head and it looked like the side of her neck as well. It was really painful to see. And she got knocked out. And I think Jessica Andrade put a few, you know, three pieces in the soda just to make sure before the ref pulled them off.
Yeah, but on top of losing, Rose lost a member of her family to coronavirus.
Exactly.
And now she's on a comeback. I got a feeling this girl's going to be hungry when she steps into that cage. She's got all that struggle that she's been through. She's going to want to get some sort of result from it.
Yeah. I really hope that she does win this next fight because she has gone through... She obviously has had some stuff going on. She was a really good model for the sport as well. Because she was very humble. She never really rose against any fighters that were getting... when Joanna was, was going after her quite a bit.
Yeah, she attacked her for her mental health. And not even that bad, the waiting. Rose Namajunas was basically just chanting the Lord's Prayer while fucking Joanna was staring her down. Then when she came into the cage, you know, she was having deep breaths. She was shaking a little bit and then she just... Something just clicked in her head and then she just unleashed.
It sounds like once she was in there, that kind of stuff, it just falls away. I know Darren Till spoke about it before because I quite like Darren Till actually. he says that we're doing the walkout, and up to that point when Bruce Buffer is talking, that it's nerve-wracking. And he says, like, for the first couple moments of the fight, he's super nervous and that. But then when you're in the fight, he just washes away. It's probably a bit of adrenaline and things like that as you walk to the stage. So that's huge. That's why I think a lot of fighters are a lot more calmer. They're a bit more we're getting more precise knockouts because we're lacking that crowd. Because they're a lot more, I think they have a clearer mind, and I think a clearer mind, and they're able just to relax. And okay, so we've actually had a confirmation via Ariel Helwani that it actually has been confirmed that Masvidal has passed his test for coronavirus and is going ahead. I could not be more stoked for this fight. I'm so glad that something has happened, and I'm so glad we've got a really good substitute for Gilbert Burns, you know?
Mm-hmm. Masvidal leaves tomorrow morning for Abu Dhabi. It's on.
I'm so happy about this fight.
Not only that, but if it goes forward, the fight, we're still waiting for an exact confirmation. Then, well, Masvidal has the longest run before a title fight. So he's had 48 fights before an official shot at the title. Because let's think, because the Baddest Motherfucker title isn't like a legitimate UFC title. It's just a hype title.
It was a hype title. And it was a big money fight, and it definitely worked. I would say, no, I just want to have an official prediction. I believe Kamaru Usman will win. I believe it will be by decision or submission.
And I reckon we're probably going to be here watching it.
We will be watching it. We're definitely watching it. I feel like Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal's endurance is very similar. Whether or not Masvidal has been doing his camp on the sidelines in case anything has been going on, we know he's got a very good work ethic. We know that Usman and his gas tanks are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Masvidal's striking is most likely much better than Usman's. However, Usman's persistence, his wrestling ability that he can tap into any time, I feel like Usman edges it out. What do you think?
I feel like Usman does edge it out, but you never know, because Masvidal, all he needs is that one strong right hand or a flying knee. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, we know that he's knocked out Darren Till, so he does have knockout power. He's knocked out a natural middleweight.
Mm-hmm. It's just hard because Kamaru Usman, he's known for being that guy who gets up nice and close. He likes to wrestle with you, likes to bring you to the ground. You know, he's got such a prominent wrestling background. But Masvidal is more like a bully fighter. You know, he likes to be the one who's always constantly
puts on that pressure.
So I'm just excited to see how the fight's going to go in general, because you've got two completely different styles.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just which one would... Do you really feel that... it's not like Kamaru's got terrible striking. He does have good striking. He's got very, very good jab. He's definitely got power in that right hand. We knew that with Colby, broke his jaw. I just feel like Usman edges it out. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do agree.
Okay. Well, we've got to wrap up the last set today. This was the MMA Hour with Jack and Joe. We also do the Everyday Hour, which is our non-MMA episode for the last set podcast. I just want to have a shout out. Joe, you recently produced your own business, which is going to be Veracity Fitness.
Yes.
Did you want to get into it quickly?
Well, basically just what's going on, it's still in the early stages, is I've started up my own little PT brand. Well, basically what I'm offering is, of course, training and nutrition, even though I'm still studying a little bit of nutrition on the side myself, but predominantly training. I work at the UFC gym, but however, what I also offer is a mobile gym as well. So recently, one thing I learned during COVID is that everyone was after equipment, everyone was after a trainer. And if you're someone who still can't go to a gym, basically what I offer to you is, provided notice, I load up my car. Basically, I bring all my equipment to you and we do a workout just so you guys can stay in shape, because I understand that everyone's busy and not everyone can afford a gym. So why not just afford someone who can come directly to you and help you get in shape? Yeah. And that's all I can say, really, but it's still in the early stages.
It's obviously in the early stages, and I have put you on the spot, but I just want to say congrats to you, because you've obviously worked hard for your education, and also for building it to what it is currently right now. If you want to find him, you can, it'd be at veracity_fitness. Mm-hmm. If you want to give him a follow, like, share his account, you're going to see Expect Big Things. You post very regularly on that account.
Yes, I am. Basically, what I've been doing at the beginning to a lot of video editing lately, so I'm just trying to get content out there for everyone. Uh-huh. Also, I'm just doing my best to, like, educate the people who follow me, because I feel like one thing that should be a role of a personal trainer is basically educating its clients, because there's only so much a personal trainer can do. Exactly. The person who's working with me has to, you know, go out and seek and do his own knowledge, and has to go out there and sort of educate himself on how to change his lifestyle, and also basically in terms of like training, because in the fitness industry there's a lot of
There's a lot of fakers out there.
Yeah, correct. But this is all in the early stages, and yet there is still more to come.
You'll keep everyone posted, especially with whatever happens with your videos, and you'll most likely be putting them up on YouTube and Instagram and IGTV, TV and things like that. Yeah. Okay, so that's me wrapping up the last set. This was the MMA Hour. If you do want to find us, we're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Podbean. If you want to know what our Instagram is, it is at The Last Set Podcast, all lowercase, no spaces or anything like that, where you can click on our bio, which is our link tree. We'll give you everything for all different streaming services for our podcast. We're available on Twitter as well, at _TheLastSet. And obviously, we're available on YouTube as well, which is The Last Set as well. Thank you for listening, and we really enjoyed this episode, didn't we?
Take care, guys.
Thank you. Peace.